The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Workday Replay from Money FM 89.3. Mind Your Business with Howie Lim, only on Money FM 89.3.
And in Mind Your Business, we have a look at the SME sector, all things that affect this rather large sector, actually. It powers half our economy and hires about 70% of our people. Now, it's all been in the news these days, how the flag bearers, or once flag bearers, of the social digital media revolution, Facebook and Google and other tech giants, have over the past year come under fire for digital election manipulation, for example, clandestine personal data collection as well. Now, how are these tech giants planning to address the privacy and security issues that defined last year's tech lash, a term used to describe public animosity, ill feelings, I suppose, towards big tech companies? We've got some help. Klaus Mortensen is principal analyst at Ecosystem. He's a leading analyst for issues related to data privacy. Klaus, thanks so much for coming today.
Thanks for having me.
Sounds like awful times for the big tech giants, isn't it?
It's testing times.
Yes.
There's got a lot of scrutiny, both from the Europe and especially in the U.S. right now. And the U.S. Senate and some of the states are really sort of clamping down on them.
Wanting to split them up, for example, putting oversight. Briefly explain what happened, what went wrong, and why they're under fire now.
Well, what went wrong was Facebook. Facebook had a 2018 that was riddled with scandal. So they had one scandal after the other, the most prolific of which was probably the Cambridge Analytica scandal, whereby some of the data that they had lent to or given out or shared to an app developer from Cambridge University was later used by Cambridge Analytica to target people for the Trump campaign, but before that for the Ted Cruz campaign. And it was all data that was given without the user's consent, and not only the specific users, but also all their contacts within Facebook were leaked or given to Cambridge Analytica. Facebook wasn't aware of this, and they did argue that it was not really usable data, but the damage was done. And then one...
And you can't use ignorance anymore.
No, ignorance is not a defense. This is something they shouldn't have shared in the first place, even though they thought they were sharing it for a relatively benign purpose. And all that just led to one scandal after another, and it's become common knowledge now that they have been very liberal in how they shared the data. And that's not something that, of course, regulators like. It's not something the general public like. And that has really resulted in all that scrutiny that we see now in the US and one of the driving forces behind how the GDPR came into effect so easily. And really, it's just heightened the topic of privacy for the public alike.
But then again, how large a role can regulation play in protecting data privacy for consumers, let's say?
Well, being European myself, of course, I tend to think a little bit like most Europeans do. And our view is obviously that it plays a huge role. And the emerging view in the U.S. now is that the regulators need to be very hands-on when it comes to steering privacy. And what we're seeing now is actually California passing a law, probably later this year, that's even more, should we say, that's harsher on these internet companies than the GDPR is. That actually puts more measures in place whereby people can opt out of having their data used for advertising purposes. For example, they have even larger ability to look into what kind of data all these internet giants have on them.
How big a role should regulation play?
I think
maybe
they should.
Next question.
I think they should play a huge role.
Because the argument has always been buyer beware. If you're going to be online, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's fine. That was fine 10 years ago when the internet wasn't as pervasive a part of our lives as it is today. Today, these free services, as we see them, are a part of our lives to an extent that nobody had foreseen before. And it's also something that you and I as consumers can't really fully fathom in terms of what kind of data do they have on us, how is it tracked, what are they using it for, and what will they use it for in the future. And is that last bit, how they're going to use it in the future, that's most worrisome for most people and should be the most worrisome part. And that's where regulators need to come in and say, well, this is something that we need to steer, this is something we need to have clear guidelines for or clear rules for, and we need to have give some of the control of that data back to the consumer.
So as we head into the whole regulation should play a bigger role, regulation will play a bigger role, what about what it'll do to the online space, which was always sort of the great unifier leveler, if you will, a space for free discourse.
Yeah, I mean, when the web first became really popular, it was kind of seen as a big free space. Everybody could express their opinion. It was free for everybody. It was the great unifier and the great equalizer. What we've seen since then now, of course, we've seen a lot of walled gardens. You could argue that Facebook is one huge walled garden within the internet. In some countries, it's certainly an internet within the internet. If you look at India, Indonesia to some part, whereby people who buy their first mobile phone, they have free Facebook services available through their operators, but everything else on the internet might be paid access in terms of using it for data purposes on their phone. So it's definitely become an internet within the internet, a walled garden, if you like. And we see that not only with Facebook, we see that with Apple, Google to some extent, although it's more, the business model is more about being open and having tapping into the rest of the internet. But certainly we're seeing these walled communities forming within the internet. And it's not walled communities that are defined by its users, it's walled communities that are defined by the companies that drive them.
Let's then go back to how then Facebook and Google and these big tech guys can sort of redeem themselves, if you will.
Well, I mean, Google is certainly trying.
They're setting aside money, thinking they're going to be fined or knowing that they're going to be fined, so let's get prepared.
Yeah, I think they all know that this is coming and that the approach from the likes of Google and Facebook has been so far that if they self-regulate, regulators won't have to. And I think that we're beyond that stage. Especially with Facebook, we've shown that we can't really trust them to take care of their own data and take care of their own policies. It just doesn't work. They're too focused on living up to the expectations of their shareholders. And they have shareholders who paid a lot of money for their stock and are expecting a lot of dividends and that the share price goes up.
Which is, I suppose, understandable from a business standpoint.
It's absolutely understandable. That's what business is all about. But what we're seeing now is that certainly Google is trying. They're certainly setting money aside. And they're also doing a lot of research into how they can provide the users with more privacy. We're not seeing as much of the same. We're not seeing quite a similar approach from Facebook. And I really think it's because they're just not ready yet. Google has been spending a lot of time on figuring out how they can do algorithms that can do the same with modeled data and on the basis of what they already know about the consumer. And a lot of the stuff that they needed before, they don't need anymore. Good example is that emails, the Gmail, which they used to scan for
place
spam
admin. Or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, well, they do it for spam, but they also do it to place ads. So if you were writing an email to one of your friends about, oh, well, I'd love to come see you in Sydney next summer, suddenly you would see that Sydney travel ads would appear in your Gmail account and in the emails.
That's horribly invasive.
That was, and people didn't really know that was happening, but it was. Of course, it's just an algorithm doing it. They're not really scanning it for content that they can use against you. In their view, it's just a way of doing better targeting for ads. They've stopped doing that now. And I think the key issue here is they've stopped doing it because they don't have to do it anymore. They found other ways of doing this without being as invasive into your privacy or apparently appearing to be as an invasive into your privacy. Now, Facebook would probably love to do the same because it's a good PR stunt, but they're not there yet. They don't know how to yet. Facebook's 2018 has been much more focused on fake news and how to stem the flow of fake news. And that means that their news feed has been their primary focus, how to change the news feed that you have in your Facebook account and figuring out how to stop the fake news and let through more of the real news. So they haven't spent as much time and effort into figuring out how to target ads without actually using the users' data against them, so to speak.
If we could come from a business perspective, how much of this has affected Facebook and Google, really? Has it just been sort of using a toothpick to try and knock down the mountain?
Well, Facebook has been affected on and off. So when the Cambridge Analytica scandal happened and a couple of the other scandals right after, their share price did go down. And not only were investors not happy, the Facebook staff was incentivized based on Facebook's share price. So they weren't happy either. And that was part of why there was such a tumultuous 2018 internally in Facebook. A lot of political play, a lot of unhappy employees for one reason or another. And it was just a messy year for Facebook. If you look at the overall user numbers, it hasn't really affected them so much. There was a movement about to, you know, delete Facebook that was starting to gain ground in 2018, but we haven't really seen it having such an effect anymore. It's one of those things that I think the company just hopes will sort of fade away, this issue, and people will start signing up again.
Do you think people are coming from, or Facebook users, for example, coming from anti-environmentalists' standpoint, which is, I'm just one person, how much can I affect anything? So if I stay or don't stay with Facebook, really doesn't matter to me, almost.
I think most of us are thinking that way. And the other thing, of course, is that it's a great tool. It's something that we like doing. They wouldn't have as many users if it weren't, should we say, almost addictive in its nature. People like Facebook and people use Facebook for purposes that they think are of relevance to them. Same thing with Gmail. We talked about how they scan your email before, or they used to, but it's a free service and it's a great email. So you're kind of saying, okay, I'll let go of some of my concerns because I get something out of it that I like, that I need.
Are people concerned at all is the thing, Klaus. Should we be concerned what might happen if, say, these big tech giants go unregulated and this continues to happen? Our privacy is invaded. Our information is just disseminated willy-nilly.
I think we should absolutely be concerned because it is a lot of data. Again, talking about Google, I've been getting these rather disconcerting emails lately tracking my behavior for the last month. It knows
what
where
you
I've
mean?
Been. Well, basically, it's this is the way you've been in April. And then it'll send me an email with a map with errors on it and my daily routine in terms of where
to
I've been.
To what end?
Well, just because it's, if you want,
To show I'm watching you.
Well, let's say if you were a frequent traveler and you want to show off, you could publish this map to your friends on Facebook and say, "Oh, look at me! I'm a jet setter." But it's more a question of just showing you. Well, these are some of the options you can have, especially if you look at your mobile phone or your smartphone as wearable computing. It knows when you've been driving. It knows when you've been walking. So it actually gives me a breakdown of this is how many kilometers you walked, which is usually not enough. This is how many kilometers you've driven, which is usually too many. And these are the plane trips you've been on. These are the cities you've visited. These are the sites you've seen. And for them, it's a way of making, for example, Google Maps more relevant to you. If it knows which shops you go to or frequent, it can send you offers from those shops at the right time. And of course, for them, it's a way of doing even better targeting for advertising. But it, to me, is one of those things where, if Google all knows all this, what's the next step? And that's always what you have to keep in mind as a consumer. You should be worried about the type of data that they're actually collecting about you. And in the future, how could that be used against you?
Or if I may, at the risk of sounding like a small person or just the one individual, what's the worst that could happen to an individual? Identity theft, for example, or
exactly.
What?
Identity theft is a good example. So the more somebody else, if they hack into your account, knows about you, the easier it is for them to pretend that they're you. Secondly, well, what if a foreign intelligence service wanted to target me for one reason or another? I'm not saying they would because I have nothing to hide in that respect.
Hypothetically,
Hypothetically, well, what if I were a dissident again in another country?
Hypothetically. Yeah.
Things like that that they could actually track. And if it's, I'm not saying that Google would hand over this data to a foreign secret service, but it could be hacked into. Mm. And we've certainly seen a lot of these hacks happening, both with Google and Facebook and every other service around there.
The infinite possibilities to use data
exactly.
is there.
Yeah.
And so, hence, the regulation needs to come in to safeguard it.
And on top of that, we all have secrets. They're not necessarily, deep secrets, but they're things that we just don't know. We just don't want other people to know about us. That's why we have private lives.
Yeah.
There are things we just want to keep private. And the more these services can track what you do, the more they know about you, the less you can keep private.
So let's assume regulation comes into play in a really big way in the near future. How might this affect, say, Facebook and Google and the tech giants' business models in that they are usually built on the ads that they're trying to sell?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Google, which is a good example, it probably wouldn't affect them too much because that's what they've been spending their time and money on over the last couple of years. It's figuring out how to target ads in other ways. Targeting what probably wouldn't be as good going forward, at least not in the foreseeable future. But if nobody else can do it better, then it wouldn't necessarily affect their revenue. They're still the best ones at doing it. What we would see, the immediate impact would probably be practical issues. So if everybody has the right to see what they have on them, it's a lot of queries that have to be taken care of. It's a lot of information that has to be divulged, and they have to make sure it's divulged to the right people. So there's a practicality issue in the immediate term for them. It could be a flood of, you open up the floodgates for people who want to know what they have and how it's used. On top of that, we've seen that already with the GDPR. There were practical issues in terms of securing consent. There were new forms that had to be worked out. There were new ways of getting to the consumer to get them to actually consent to what you're doing that had to come and be taken care of. And there were new ways of discovering data that had to be implemented, because if a consumer in the European Union wants to know what information Google has on them, they have to be able to retrieve all that information under the GDPR. So these are things that we really, really, really see from them. There's some practical issues they have to overcome, which will cost them a lot of time and a lot of money. Secondly, we're looking at, some of the services that Facebook, for example, wanted to monetize in the past, so their messaging services are probably not going to be very good advertising platforms. They have to find new ways of monetizing these services. Could be that they want to use them for communications channels for companies who want to reach out. You could see that with WhatsApp, for example. It might be a monetization opportunity to Facebook to say, okay, we'll sell this to the big retailers in terms of reaching their customers.
So now how?
Well,
on that depressing note,
yeah.
Might consumers just stay offline altogether?
No, I don't think that needs to happen. we won't. That's the thing. Life goes on. Life moves on. Things change, and things have changed all the time in the life of the internet. It's not that old internet.
Thanks to our hypothetical situations and examples, people might feel a little freaked out at this
point.
Yeah,
they might. I think what we need to do is to make sure that we think about our online behavior and think about how we let the different services track what we do. Thing we got about legislation is that it does force typically the online providers to allow you to switch features on and off. So the email I get from Google in terms of where I've been and what I've done,
no.
I can actually turn that feature off. And I've done that. I don't want these emails anymore.
Yes. Ecosystem360.com is where you can find Klaus and more of his findings. ECOSYSTM360.com. He is principal analyst there. Klaus Mortensen, thank you so much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.